Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Europe and the U.S. are trying to figure out how to deal with what's been called a refugee crisis of epic proportions. People leaving by boat and by foot from North Africa and the Middle East into Europe, and some go to the United States. One film director wanted to explore the power dynamics between Europeans and the migrants that end up there and do it in an unconventional format.
Guido Hendrix's documentary, Stranger in Paradise, consists of a prologue, three acts, and an epilogue. It features an actor and real refugees discussing a European immigration system that, in practice, only allows resident status to a very select few.
Hendrix and Mary Flynn, the refugee program director for Lutheran Social Services of Wisconsin, sat down with Lake Effect's Mayan Silver to offer some perspective on the film and the issues it raises.
When I was working on this film, at that time a lot of films were being made dealing with migration, and what I found very interesting that they had three typical characteristics. One of them, that they were all political correct, they were all somehow sentimental, and they all tried to reflect the suffering of the migrants, so to tell the story from their perspective, to get into their heads. And a lot of those films are important and interesting, but my aim was to actually radically break with all these three typical features we saw a lot in these films.
How did you aim to break with them?
Well, for example, the first act is everything but political correct. It's like the political incorrect sentiment or voice that's very prevalent. I mean, there are, for me as a filmmaker, I think there are two ways how to approach documentaries. One is to regard it as recording events, and the other one is as a subjective reflection of reality. And the latter is more related to documentary as an art form. So in that sense, I don't necessarily make the difference between documentary and fiction, but I see them more like genres. And I try to use those instruments to tell the story I want to tell. So that's why I came up with this actor who, in my opinion, was the best tool to convey this story. Like the whole idea of documentary that's more related to journalism, I don't believe in this, like this objectivity thing. I think if I want to see reality, I always say I just walk outside. In the cinema, I'm only interested in the vision or the subjective a reflection of reality of the filmmaker. So that's why, having said that, I allow myself to also play with these different forms and different structures, both documentary and fiction, and mix them.
So this actor was working with actual refugees, and I'm curious about how you got the refugees and how you worked them into the story. Actually, maybe you can answer that.
Yeah, our goal was from the very first start to really engage the migrants into this film, or the refugees. So basically, first we also did a test shoot 1 year before, but at the real shooting, we spent about 2-3 days to meet them and to assemble the classes and to introduce ourselves and not only explain them that it was an actor that was standing in front of them and what this actor was going to say to them, but also try to explain the whole project and what our goal was, what we tried to convey. So, yeah, that was the way how we worked. So you could say we tried to make the film together and make them very aware of what was ahead of them.
So the actor was engaging with the refugees, and in Act One, you said it was the politically incorrect version of what's going around or what's considered to be said in Europe, right?
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you about one of the exchanges. He starts out with saying that how much the refugees cost, and that each cost 26,000 euros for the first year that they're in Europe, and then he asks them to calculate how much that those people in the room cost. Can you tell me about the exchange that happened next when he says that, and I should also say that the entire room in the first act is just African immigrants, and he says that 55% of Africans who come to Europe will never work. And one of the refugees asks if it's an exaggeration, and then he proceeds to say this.
I don't think you are responsible. I blame the people in Europe, the so-called dreamers, the so-called idealists, the so-called left-wingers, who actually made this happen, who gave you false hope, who built you a Fata Morgana that is not real. But those people, they pretend it's gonna be easy. And that's why you all cross this terrible Mediterranean Sea. You take the risk, but especially for your children. How terrible is that? Your children can't decide if they want to come or not. You just say, come with me. The little child goes with you, and then he drowns in the sea. That was his life. That was it for him.
So before
is that a better life?
Is that fair?
No, the world...
Is that fair?
No, it's not fair.
So why?
The world is not fair. I was born here, and you were born there. That's not fair.
Why
it's life.
Why they don't stay here and do talk?
We have to move on.
That's why I said we need your help because we have been paying tax.
I can't help you. Stop saying we need your help. You need to help each other. Help each other.
Can you tell me a little bit about that point in that exchange?
Yeah, it's also like actually our prime minister, he once said this, that it's like a geographical roulette. So if you are born there, it's unlucky, but we can do nothing about it. When I conducted my research and I was actually collecting all those, the arguments and the rhetorics that the more, you could say, naturalist conservatives use, there was just one part of it that they tend to blame more the left-wing politicians for making these myths and, you know, hiding the truth. So that was how that part ended up in the film, I think.
And he also talked about the fear Europeans have about the law of Allah coming over their land, and then the fear that immigrants will become, or migrants will become, the majority. So I was wondering, because this is typically, it's a white man who is representing Europe, and then it was African men who were, was that a conscious decision in that first act?
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily. If we could have found migrants from or refugees from the Middle East, they would have been in the classes like they are in the second and third act. But at the moment we were shooting, we were also a little bit dependent on what migrants were there at which point. So, yeah.
And was it a conscious decision to have the actor be a...
Yes. Yeah, that was, I mean, we needed a representation of Europe, and yeah, like I was also looking for an actor with a kind of gaze in his eyes that was hard, like a little bit mysterious, if that's the right word, so that you could not grasp who exactly is this guy, so he could also play these different roles in a convincing way, and yeah, so for me it was the most logical choice to make it a white person.
I mean, Europe is very different in its identity than it was. There's kind of all different types of Europeans. You can see, you know, Romanians and Spain and Turks and Germany and this and that everywhere, you know. So do you think that having a white male represent Europe is in and of itself somewhat problematic?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, you I mean, it's fair to argue this way. I mean, it's not necessarily white, but I think to get this message more across, or also to I didn't necessarily want to make a caricature out of it, but I did want to emphasize this power disbalance, and so yeah.
Is it buying into an outdated narrative? You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. I mean, still, I think in Europe, I mean, the ones in power are mostly white, I would say, still. So, and this is like the whole West, right? I mean, it's hard to argue the other way, I would think. Yeah, so, I mean, you could, of course, it's changing, and that's a good thing. But still, yeah, I think basically it's constructed like this.
Well, so I'm going to introduce Mary. Mary Flynn has been sitting here from the Lutheran Social Services Refugee Program. And I was just going to ask you about your take on the first act, because you've seen the film, right?
Yes.
And so you don't settle refugees in a vacuum. Have you come across some of these attitudes, and how do they come about?
I've absolutely seen those attitudes, and I find this film very powerful, and I'm really happy to be able to be sitting here with the filmmaker today, because it really is adding a lot of depth and context. In my job, part of our mission statement is we help people improve the quality of their lives. So I know that that's a very powerful statement. And when I saw your film, there was a lot of power in each of the acts. You know, Act One was the power of words and the power of misinformation. That, as you said, this you were portraying some of the comments that are being made about refugees, and they're not accurate. And that was a very powerful act, and I had a visceral response to it. And then Act Two, it really gets into, for me, the power of hope and the power of words once again, but in a way that lifts people up and gives them something to go for, you know, to work towards. And then in Act Three, the power of the system and the checks and balances that are in place for refugees and asylees. The way they showed the interview process and the way they whittled the large group down to the precious few that ended up making it through is a very accurate portrayal of what I see on the job. But the comments from Act One, the incorrectness, is something that I see quite a bit and that I hear quite a bit. So very powerful across the board.
Well, so, you know, would you say that you are trying to shape public opinion?
I think in my work, we're just trying to give the best information that we can and the most accurate that we know. There's always going to be differing opinions, differing thoughts about this whole situation. But shaping, no, I don't have the poetic license that a filmmaker might have to shape the message or the story. I just have the facts that I have to go on and be as honest as I can.
Well, so one of the things that the actor in the second act started talking about was he started talking about the colonial past of Europe. And then he also started talking about some facts refuting that presumably more liberal individuals would use to refute the idea that migrants are going to take over Europe. And then there's also the 7 case studies about removing borders.
So it's logic, right? Yeah. It's logic. If we open the world economy, according to Harvard University, one of the biggest, most important universities in the world, $35 trillion. Can you imagine? It's this classroom full of money, and that's times hundreds. That's $35 trillion that would be injected extra in the world economy. And it would only would work if you would come in. If you would help us out with jobs we don't want to do. So it's time Europe admits we need you.
Can you now, tell me a little bit about, you know, where you got those facts and what you were using with those?
Yeah, most of them were just, I read a lot of newspapers, also scientific articles. So everything actually I could find to one, on the one hand, try to construct these two speeches. That's how actually I approach them, and that represent the dominant public discourse. And on the other hand, the third act was the most work and the most research since these rules and regulations were very hard to get a hand on. So I need to speak with some people who used to work for Immigration Service, so I could get my hands on some classified papers, and then slowly we had to try to catch the essence of it, which was, in my opinion, like you said very well, somehow a knockout competition.
I need to ask you one last question. Is there anyone in here who left his fingerprints when he arrived here in Europe? Anyone?
Yeah.
Please stand up. Anyone else? Okay, please stand up. It's called the Dublin Regulation. It means when you ask for asylum, you always have to ask asylum in the first country that you entered. And because you left your fingerprints, everyone knows, no, they entered here. So for now, the people that are standing up, I would like you now to invite you to leave the room. You cannot get a permit of residence in the Netherlands. We'll never be able to. Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming.
And they had to, all these obstacles, we tried to incorporate in the scene, and then you can see actually how basically the procedure works.
And Mary, coming from an American perspective and seeing our refugee system, Do you see things similar or different to how the system was portrayed in the film?
It was a really interesting comparison between the way the United States is receiving refugees. It's so different, though. You know, the United States is surrounded by oceans and two very large other countries. So refugees arrive through a very organized governmental process. And when they do arrive, the United States gives them the tools that they need to do well and to become self-sufficient and independent. They arrive with full, permanent, documented status from day one. Not so in the film. And that's really what's going on right now in Europe is many people are just fleeing and are able to make it into Europe, but they don't have that process in place to give people work authorization, permanent housing. You know, we have adjustment of status or green card and a pathway to citizenship. That is not the case in Europe. So it was very interesting for me to see the film and compare those factors.
And what would you say above all was one of your messages from the film?
I think now we talked about the three acts, but there was also an epilogue in the film. And that was, for me personally, maybe the most important scene, because in that scene, it's not about the power relations between European and migrants, but about the power relation between a filmmaker and the one he portrays in front of his camera. Because I found out, and I believe that the difficult thing in documentary filmmaking, that it has an inherent exploitative character. And you have to be aware of that, you have to be transparent about it, and you have to deal with this. And that's what I was trying to tell in this last scene. And through this, also to explain that we are all living in somehow parallel universes, like the migrants, Europe, but also as filmmakers going to our film festivals in these gated communities. And this is interesting. And I think the question, do we want to live these parallel universes, is an interesting question to ask.
Well, guys, thank you so much for talking about this film and coming in today. Thank you, Mary and Guido.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. It's a powerful film.
Mary Flynn directs the Refugee Resettlement Program for Lutheran Social Services of Wisconsin and Upper Michigan. Guido Hendricks is the director of the documentary Stranger in Paradise. They spoke with Mayan Silver. Stranger in Paradise shows one more time at the Milwaukee Film Festival this evening at the Oriental Theater.